I'm Jim Benson, and you're listening to TV Time Machine on Intelligent Talk, 1170 KCBQ. Like us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter, and visit our show archives at tvtimemachine.com.
You have such a unique quality and tone to your voice.
Lindsay, I really, really thoroughly enjoyed the performance. It's probably the coolest thing that's happened over the second season so far.
Lindsay, I love your voice. Let me hear you say,
ladies and gentlemen, you're about to embark on a journey through a vast galaxy that traverses memory, generations, and popular culture. A magical trip through time as we meet the men and women of yesterday and today who have shaped not only what we see on TV, but the way we see ourselves. I'm Jim Benson. Join me, if you will, on an exploration of television's past, present, and future as we climb aboard the TV Time Machine. Our destination subject today will be Lindsay Paveo from the second season of NBC's The Voice. Lindsay Paveo herself will join us for a fascinating excursion exploring this hit TV series and her upcoming album, The Symptom. We'll begin our exciting and fun-filled odyssey right after these brief messages.
I was born Mary Tyler Moore.
It's Jesse Donald Knotts.
Fred McFeely Rogers.
Leslie Moonves.
Isabel Sanford.
Leslie Renee Stahl.
Robert Edward Turner.
Regis Francis Philbin.
Aaron Spelling.
Since 1999, the Archive of American Television has been preserving the memories, knowledge, and insights of the men and women whose talents and vision have helped shape this remarkable medium. Over 500 video interviews with these TV legends are now available on the Archive of American Television website at metvlegends.org. There, you can sign up to receive news, updates, and also become a sponsor to help preserve television history for generations to come. That's metvlegends.org.
The mythological proportions of Star Trek provide something that's missing in people's consciousness, psyche.
The Archive of American Television, capturing television history, one voice at a time. Today on the TV Time Machine, we ask you to play musical chairs as we make a 180-degree turn to experience a unique and remarkable voice. In this edition of our program, we are proud to welcome one of the semi-finalists from the second season of The Voice, Lindsay Paveo. A member of Team Christina, Ms. Paveo's journey on the NBC series is not only distinguished by her popularity that season, but her moving and uniquely ethereal voice that resulted in a record amount of iTunes downloads. Over the next segment, Lindsay Paveo will not only help us explore virtually every aspect of her amazing experience on The Voice, but will also talk about her upcoming album, The Symptom. Again, for those of you intrepid enough to open your heart-shaped box, feel free to say ah as we turn down the volume of the past to give voice to a beautiful sound in the present. Lindsay, thank you for coming on board the TV Time Machine.
Thanks for having me.
Lindsay, tell us about yourself, your background, and what inspired your interest in music?
Well, I guess it was sort of genetic. My whole family is artists and musicians. My mom's a painter. My dad's a singer-songwriter. So I guess I was just sort of raised into it.
Now, in previous interviews, you've said that as a kid, you were interested in being an inventor. Did that also lead to your interest in music?
Yeah, well, I guess I was always interested in music as a kid, and then as I was kind of growing up, I tried a lot of different things. Yeah, I used to want to be an inventor. I loved technology. I loved computers. And then I picked up a violin, and I don't know, something just sort of switched, I guess.
Now,
I don't know how to explain it.
Now, do you see any parallels between your interest in being an inventor and being a composer?
Yeah, I think it's all about creativity and trying to do something different from an inspired place, not something that's, you know, kind of been done or the same thing every day. But I do think music is innovation, if you let it be.
Lindsay, what does your music mean to you, and what does it say about you?
I think that always changes. I don't think it's one thing for me, but right now, with the project I'm doing right now, I'm finishing an album called The Symptom. And the idea behind the album was that everyone has a certain level of dysfunction. And I see a very big pattern, especially in creative type, artistic type. And it's very closeted. You know, things like depression, bipolar, anxiety, even schizophrenia. And to a lesser degree, you know, people walk around with these very sad thoughts and feeling very isolated. And there's almost a shame surrounding it, and it doesn't leave much room for people to talk about it. And I guess on a much more abstract level than that, this album was about me sort of exercising those demons that are in my life that I've struggled with for a very long time, including depression. And so these songs are kind of about the different me's sort of talking to each other, the optimist, the pessimist, the in-between, the confused person. And so the idea of calling it The Symptom, a very clinical name, was just that for me it was about opening up this box of things that people might be afraid to talk about, especially young people. Are very isolated and upset about a lot of the things that they experience. And so for me, it was about reaching out and saying, hey, I'm not okay, and that's okay. Because maybe the human condition isn't always perfectly happy.
But isn't it sort of a double-edged sword? Because isn't that kind of conflict, doesn't that also add to creativity and maybe actually is the driving force behind creativity?
Absolutely, yeah. Something that could be labeled a disease can be a gift. And it's, I think we ask the wrong questions. It's not what's wrong with you, what's broken with you, but it's what's different about you and how are you going to live life and function with it and make it all live in harmony, you know, the difference between swimming upstream and downstream and going with the things that you are. If you're a creative person, if you're a sad person, what are you feeling? How can you relate that to other people, you know? And how can you find happiness in your life? And so I agree. I don't think I would be the same artist without the things, the struggles that I experience.
And kind of in a strange way, if you are perfect, you might not be able to help people as much. But if you have imperfections, you can help a lot of people.
Absolutely. Yeah, I think it's something you have to grow into. But yes, I believe that the struggles that I have gone through and do go through in my life are important. And to some degree, it's what I define as my purpose in life, is to connect with people and try and help in this world. And in the small, you know, time that I have here is just to connect with people. You know, you're not alone. And so I wouldn't give it up. I wouldn't give up the experiences and struggles that I've had in my life, because I feel like your struggles and your experiences are what you have to offer to the world.
And you've connected with millions of people because you were on The Voice. And a lot of the things that I've read online, comments from your fans, have said that your music makes them feel happy. Has that been a surprise to you, that you've been able to affect people in that positive way?
Yeah, I don't think I ever saw this for myself, connecting with people. And I bet that's, you know, part of the dark nature of my own psyche, is that I probably have parts of me that don't believe that I can connect with people. And so when I see it happening, it's such a beautiful encouragement. I don't think people understand that being a listener, being an audience, is just as equal of a participant as someone who's playing the music. And, you know, that my music has brought comfort or happiness to anyone is all that I could ask for.
Well, you obviously connected with people on The Voice, because I've noticed on The Voice that there are a lot of very, very talented people, you know, with tremendous voices, but they don't really advance in the competition because they're not connecting either with the music emotionally or with the audience.
Yeah, I kind of refer to that idea as the difference between an artist and an entertainer. you can have a ton of entertainers in the room, but the artist is going to stick out amongst them, not because they have a better voice, not because they're prettier, but because they do exactly what you said, they connect. And that's one of the most basic human instincts. We just want that social connection, that empathy, and I mean, it's kind of a pack animal sort of thing if you deduct it down to that. But yeah, I mean, we do want to be entertained. But we want artists. We still do. There's still a place for the artist in this world.
When you were on The Voice, you performed Say Ah during your blind audition. What was that experience like for you? And is that a particular specialty or joy for you that you can take a song like that and interpret it in a very unique way?
Well, first, the experience was surprising. I didn't expect that response up until the moment I was standing on the stage. I felt as though I was making a very big mistake, but I had to go with what I had created, what I made. And I don't know if it's a specialty of mine to do that with songs, but it's something I really enjoy, is taking something and giving it your own intentions, be it music or, you know, whatever it is, just sort of taking something and building on it. And so, yeah, it's something that I definitely enjoy doing when I'm not writing original music, and very therapeutic for me because it is someone else's work. So it's not exactly like everything's, all the judgment's hanging on me. And so it is a good place to relax and go and rewrite other people's music.
Well, your rendition of Say Ah made a tremendous impact. It really did. I mean, the amount of views on YouTube are amazing. Did that surprise you, the kind of impact that your interpretation had?
Yeah, definitely. I thought that I would be lucky to just get through the round. But then I saw that, especially with, you know, my other contestants, the way they responded and were impressed, it was just, it was such an honor to me. And I think the culture of taking songs and changing them has been around for a while. I can't take responsibility for that. But giving it some exposure, giving these artists, these indie artists that are taking other people's music and changing it, exposure and opening people's minds to that, was a really cool thing to participate in.
Now, Christina Aguilera, you ultimately chose her to be your coach. Mm-hmm. Going in, was, if you can say, was she the coach that you wanted?
No.
Oh, okay.
Not that I didn't. It was neither. I guess I just didn't expect it. I didn't expect for us to have any sort of musical connection, which I guess was pretty ignorant on my part, because after some research, I realized that she did a lot of work with an incredible singer-songwriter named Sia, who is quite up my alley of genre music, and I should have known, you know, that her spectrum of musical interest is far beyond what she does herself. And so, no, I was completely floored. I thought I would go with Adam or Blake or even CeeLo. No one really before, I mean, her before no one else.
Well, she became really your biggest fan. Mm-hmm. What was she like as a coach, and what was it like working with her?
She was great. She's my opposite. You know, if you get to know me, you would realize that I'm a pretty reserved person. I have a hard time being confident in myself, not to the point where I have to, you know, seek gratification. It's a very personal thing, I guess. And she is a very self-assured person, and not in a negative way at all, in a wonderful way. And, you know, without saying it, I remember once she said to me, because I kept apologizing during rehearsal because I kept messing up, she's like, "You never have to apologize for anything." And yeah, obviously she means in the context of music. But it made me realize that if you don't believe in yourself, you're not helping anyone. You're only being a burden to yourself and to other people, because you can't be who you need to be. You can't offer what you can. And so that's kind of what I took away. She said, don't be apologetic for yourself and for others. And so I guess that kind of sums up our relationship. She just sort of shook me and was like, you know, stop being so dark and just do what you need to do. Do what you want to do.
From a technical standpoint, what she taught you, what surprised you the most? Did you have any aha experiences when she was coaching you, taking you through that process?
I think technically, she taught me to take risks, I suppose. Like, you know, we don't sit there and do scales, so it's not exactly like a physical thing. But she taught me to take risks and to push myself. Because, you know, if you've seen a Christina Aguilera performance, there's a lot going on vocally. And, you know, sometimes I can be a bit of a minimalist. And so she just sort of pushed me to be like a little bit more embellished, a little bit more of a risk taker, not to hide behind my own voice, but to really push my voice to a different limit. And so she would always have me put little pieces in that weren't there, little runs or scales or maybe hit an awkward note just because, you know. And so I think that that's what she taught me, was risks are good.
Right. I think after one of your performances, she said that she wanted you to do that falsetto thing, which you did, and she was very happy about that.
Yeah, that was a big one that she wanted me to do. And I remember trying 1,000 different things right there. Like, I wasn't sure exactly how to do it, and always overthinking. But, yeah, luckily, she really did notice that.
Now, you performed a Nirvana song, not by yourself, with Lee Koch, Heart-Shaped Box.
I've been drawn into your magnet, to heartbeat thread. And I wish I could eat your cancer when you turn black.
What was that like, and how much did it mean to you to be able to perform a Nirvana song in front of millions of people?
I was floored. Well, when I did my open call audition in San Francisco, like the cattle call, that was the song that I did, a cappella. And so that song, you know, is an extremely important song in my life. Nirvana is. And being able to play it was amazing. Like, it's a very high honor, because they don't really allow people to play Nirvana songs too often on these shows. And I remember, I'm sorry, I'm trying to figure out how to say this. It was just kind of a full circle moment for me, going from, you know, listening to Nirvana and that being kind of like where I learned about myself, and then being on this pop show and singing this song in this very weird way. Like, I felt very free, which is surprising for a show like that to feel free, because, you know, you have all these cameras and everything. But for me, it was freeing.
Well, your next performance on The Voice was performing Somebody That I Used to Know. Now, that had a lot of choreography and whatnot. What was that experience like for you?
Weird. But also nice. It was a practice in sort of taking my own persona and my own self-doubt and setting it aside and sort of character acting. I was a different form of myself, I guess. You know, you hear about all these artists having different names for themselves, and their performance person, and I felt like that was my first time being somebody else. And it was fun. It was nuts. Wearing high heels was terrible. That was my first time wearing high heels. Well, I did in the battle round, but I wasn't, you know, doing a bunch of walking around, sitting and standing. So if I could take anything back, I would not wear those damn heels. Because if you watch the video, which I have and scrutinized, obviously, I'm like hunched over in this very like center of gravity way that's not very glamorous. And so, yeah, that's the one thing I would change is take off the heels. And what? That's what I did, actually, at the Skinny Love performance. I was barefoot. And so that was my, like, fight against the producers that always want women in heels sort of moment.
I think you were wearing heels when you performed Please Don't Go as well. Is that right?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Huge heels. Yeah. I saw Justin Bieber that night backstage, and like I couldn't believe how much I was towering over him in those heels. Like, I mean, I probably tower over him generally. In heels, it was just like I felt like a giant woman.
Now, when you perform Please Don't Go, that was a very emotional moment.
As they run in, I stay running from tomorrow. I stay running.
What led up to that? Why did you feel that way as you were performing at that time?
You know, there's a lot of emotional moments that they just don't show. Like, I'm a crier. You never know it, but I am. It was a moment of happiness, which I guess is kind of hard to see, but it was like the gravity and the beauty of what was happening in my life right there was hitting me, and I felt loved. You know, there were fans out there. There were people who were connecting with what I was doing. It had some sort of meaning beyond entertainment, beyond competition. In that moment, I was really embracing where I was, and I was also scared. You know, who wants to get kicked off a show on national TV? It's a little bit embarrassing. My favorite moment of ever being on the show was right before I started. I was in one of the pits. And I look down, and there's this drag queen. She has a little hat on. Or maybe she wasn't. Maybe it was just a woman with a ton of makeup on. Whatever. Can't tell. But I looked at her. She looked at me. I couldn't hear because I had in-ear monitors. But she said, like, you got this. Like, or something. She just, like, said this thing just to me. And I was like, I do. And we just had this moment. And it was just, like, I felt loved. And I felt happy and grateful and sad and just overwhelmed. And I embraced the moment, and it just sort of made me get a little bit emotional.
Was it also the fact that they did this, I think, only for one season, where they had that save moment, you basically have to sing to be saved. Did that also add to that, the potential finality of that?
Absolutely, yeah. It was a bizarre thing. You know, we didn't find out till halfway through the audition process that whole thing was going to be happening. It adds to the overwhelming nature. But at the same time, I think you sort of hit like a ceiling with pressure, and it's just like another thing. another crazy thing is happening. Oh, we're going on the Jay Leno show. Okay, it was just.
Yeah, because it must be just a crazy whirlwind. All that stuff compressed into such a short period of time.
Yeah. I think humans adapt to strange conditions quicker than one would think, though. It started to feel normal. You know, we'd sit in our rehearsal spaces waiting to go in and play with, the band. And this is a world-renowned band of just all-star musicians. started to feel normal. And it was just, it's the weirdest thing because you're in a freaky situation. And, yeah, it's actually kind of more unnerving how normal it got to be under that much pressure all the time.
Now, you mentioned Skinny Love.
And I told you to be patient. And I told you to be fine. And I told you to be balanced. And I told you to be kind. And now all your love is wasted. Well, who the hell was I? And I'm breaking out the bridges.
Was that a deliberate decision to sort of go back to your roots?
Yeah, it was a place I wanted to go for a long time in the competition. It was where I started, really, with my private auditions, which you never really see. And that was the first night that I felt like 100% I had represented myself without any exception.
Yeah, and interestingly enough, that performance has a power to it that is not really obvious, but it's there. Do you feel that?
Yeah, and I think it comes from a kind of lost art of, you know, the power of something that's quiet. Because, you know, we love our soul singers and belters and all this stuff, but the truth is, that if you give something dynamic and a little bit of quiet, it can have a lot more emotional power without the volume.
When it came time to leave The Voice, what were you thinking and feeling at that time?
I can't lie. It's some level of heartache, but not because I wanted to win. Just because it's a sad thing to end. You know, it was a community. I was employed there. It was like summer camp, you know. It was like any beautiful romantic era of your life that is about to come to an end. So my heart did ache. But I didn't feel like a loser, you know. I couldn't be more happy for Chris Mann. I think that, honestly, he's been working in the industry a lot longer than me. He had it coming, you know? And it's just a life change, you know? Like, if someone breaks up with you,
right.
You have to adjust. I knew it was coming. Obviously, you know, it's an eventuality. And I never had my eye on winning. I never had my eye on getting on the show, to be honest. I just wanted to go audition. And so I got more than I had ever dreamed of. But yeah, it felt a little bit like getting broken up with, regardless of the fact that everything was so good.
But you're continuing on. You mentioned your upcoming album, The Symptom. Tell us more about that in terms of what you're doing, the songs that are going to be available on that, and when it will be available.
It's going to be available September 21st on Bandcamp. And then I'm going on tour, and then I'm going to remaster it and re-release it on iTunes. So pretty soon here. And the tracks vary from simple acoustic tracks to some pretty, I guess, hippie trippy psychedelic sort of stuff. So it covers a little bit of ground.
Sort of like the stuff I grew up with.
Not quite. Like, it's its own thing, I guess. A more modern sort of version of that. I can't say that I have the incredible guitar skills of some of, you know, I'm not the next Doors. I'm not the next Zeppelin. But it's its own thing. And to me, it's my first record. You know, it's not going to be a platinum album. That was never the point. The point was just for me to start in a direction and not worry too much about the outcome. Everyone's obsessed with the outcome when it comes to music. Whose hands is this going to get in? How much notoriety is it going to get? But I wanted this just to be the start. I'm a late starter. Yeah, I'm 24. But it is what it is.
Do you have a philosophy of, artistically, do you have a philosophy of music, and can that be found in your album?
The philosophy of music. You know, every time I try to come up with rules, it only makes things harder. So I guess not. Just that it should be sincere, and it should tell a story, and the intention should be completely in that. And I can't say I have a philosophy. I just know singing makes me happy, and if it makes other people happy, then it gives it a purpose.
Lindsay, where can people find out more about yourself, your music, online?
LindsayPaveo.com. Twitter.com/LindsayPaveo. Facebook.com/LindsayPaveo. The Voice.
Lindsay, it's been a tremendous pleasure having you aboard the TV Time Machine. Feel free to join us again in the future or in the past.
Thank you. It's been an honor for me to be on it. Look how they shine for you. Look how they shine. Look at the stars.